Welcome to the Giants Talk Podcast. Here's Alex Pavlovich and Cole Kuiper. I know those guys.
All right, the Giants magic number is officially in single digits, and Giants Talk is here to celebrate. I'm Cole Kuiper here with Alex Pavlovich. We're the hosts of Giants Talk Podcast, which brings new episodes to you every Monday and Thursday right here on the NBC Sports Podcast Network, available wherever you listen to your podcasts. Today's episode, we'll be joined by Dwayne Kuiper, as we do every Thursday. And Alex, do you want to tease who we're going to have on next episode, or should we save that for later?
I never tease an interview unless it's recorded. So,
all right.
Little trick of the business there. So,
on that note, we're not teasing anything, but maybe tune in on Monday. Giants Talk is brought to you by Wendy's. Right now at Wendy's, get two breakfast sandwiches for just $4. I want to talk some Giants Padres. This series, for being two wins in the bag already, has stressed me out so much. But more than anything, I'm excited that with the close of Wednesday night's game, that is our final post 7 p.m. start of the regular season.
I've been pro 6:45. I'm pro 6:10. Like, give me a 5:40. I'm all in on moving these up. And it's been a long time since I have been in the ballpark for a 7:10 p.m. start, because I think the Padres might be the only team still doing these. Maybe the Dodgers, maybe, I don't know. But it just, those Dodger games, you go into them expecting that you're going to walk out of there at 11:30. This game ended at 11:06 p.m. tonight. Like,
insane.
It is. We're taping, it's after midnight right now. I have a bag of Cheetos, a box of M&Ms, some water. I'm ready to get healthy and make it through the night. But yeah, I am 100% in on 6:40 starts and anything beyond that too. 7:10 is just too late for baseball teams that are going to be playing, you know, every single pitch. Like, they did it last night too. It's the same thing. All right, rant over. But anyway, like, two nights in a row this happened. This is not Red Sox-Yankees. We don't want this to turn into Red Sox-Yankees.
All right, so that's your one and only rant of the evening. Alex, how was San Diego?
Oh, well, you just teed me up for a second rant. You know this is my favorite city. I love coming to San Diego. I've always come here. I'm very disappointed right now with Petco Park. It is, I guess we have this in a lot of society right now. It's like 20% shuttered, 30% shuttered maybe, which makes a big difference when there's 39,000 people in a ballpark like there was on Wednesday night. I think they drew 30, 33 on Tuesday night. So this is my favorite place to visit. I love this ballpark, but right now you have to wait a good 20, 30 minutes in line if you want your nachos or your tacos. And
so do they have full food, full beer, full everything you're looking for?
No, they have a lot of beer. I'll give them that. There's a lot of craft beer here, which is not
always like the biggest outdoor beer garden in.
Yeah, no, they've closed down a lot of places that are still closed, and it's just, I don't know. So you and I have been harsh on Oracle Park and them being a little bit slow, but I was really surprised here. I thought they had like the party atmosphere going. They were the team that on June 19th were like, we're full reopening. We're ready to go. We are the rival to the Dodgers. We're ready in every single respect. Like, they are not ready because they are overwhelmed right now in the concession stands and in the concourses. And they also replaced my favorite nacho stand with a hot dog stand, which is a step back in every direction. So yeah, second rant over.
All right.
I don't know.
A disappointing
couple of games.
I'd like
to hear from some people who came down here, because there are a lot of Giants fans down here. It just doesn't feel like as good as it was before.
It definitely sounded like there were a lot of Giants fans down there. I think I heard a overrated chant when Tatis Jr. was batting on Wednesday night. I mean, unless that was Padres fans, but I don't think they're getting that salty at a almost sub 500 team.
Yeah, they were tempting fate with that one, because that was – the press box here lines up directly behind the plate, and we'll get to this moment, but that ball off the bat in the ninth inning, there was a moment, and I'm sure it happened at home too. I saw the home camera angle. So there were some heart attacks had, I'm sure, around the Bay Area.
Well, do you know who would have hit the ball out there?
Who's that?
Late Night Lamont.
He would have.
Late Night Lamont would have put that out probably the other side of the field, but His numbers in the ninth inning have been absolutely insane. He was 12 for 19 via Tuesday. He did not get a hit on Wednesday, so 12 for 20 in the ninth inning this season. We'll talk to my dad about this when we have him on later. But this is incredible. It's been so much fun just having a guy to rely on. And I know there's been debate over whether clutch is an actual thing. Like, is that a stat you can track via sabermetrics? It doesn't seem like it is. It's one of those intangibles that teams that are super sabermetric heavy seem not to rely on. So it's great that the Giants have a clutch guy and are actually relying on it.
Yeah, I've always been pro clutch, even though I'm very pro analytics. I am also pro chemistry because I've seen it and we're seeing it this year. I am pro clutch because I think, again, we're seeing it. Like Lamont Wade Jr., you know, he's not going to hit 600 in his career in the ninth inning going forward. But he is a guy that you want up there in a big spot because you know he's not going to panic. And he doesn't care if he gets to two strikes. He doesn't care if he's in a tough spot. And he doesn't care if it's somebody like Melanson who's really tough on lefties. You just know he's not going to panic. And I thought the other really good example in Tuesday night's game was Brandon Belt bobbling that ball. And how many first basemen in this league throw that into left field because they freaked out and, you know, all of a sudden they're worried about not getting the double play and you know, Belt just calmly flipped it over to short, and Brandon Crawford, who probably was headed over to the bag expecting the throw to come, you know, a second earlier, calmly swipes the bag. So I just think, you know, that would be my best example of clutch. It's not just Wade, but those guys who have done this a million times and have been in big spots and have won World Series and just did not panic in a moment where, you know, when that ball gets up in the air off Belt's glove, like you think the worst. And
I don't want to say it's to be expected with those guys, but, you know, they have been in the big situations before. Those are guys with World Series rings. So to see Lamont Wade Jr. just unflappable under the pressure in these big moments really makes me look forward to see what he's going to do in the postseason.
Yeah, October.
Yeah, another guy, though, who's just unflappable the last few days, Mr. Doval out there on the mound. Kazmir, after the game, said he has ice in his veins. That was amazing, and that he owes Doval a meal.
Yeah.
I don't think I could survive being on the mound in that situation. He got put in Wednesday night, bases loaded, one out, big boy at the plate.
Well, you do not have ice in your veins, but yeah.
Don't, dude. I'm a coward.
Nick Ortiz, who's their quality assurance coach, and he is the interpreter for the young Spanish-first players. He told me that before Wednesday's game. We were talking about Camilo, and he said the same thing. He said he has ice in his veins. Like, he's just unafraid. And it is a really good combination when you can throw 102.5 miles per hour. You have a slider that you can throw at Manny Machado three times, as he did on Wednesday night. Ooh. And you have ice in your veins. Like, it is – he has literally the complete package to be a very, very good closer in this league. The only thing that has held him back at times has been command. And – I don't think he's all the way there yet, but he's a lot better than he was earlier this season. And really, you know, 9 scoreless outings in September and starting to have the feel like, look, this team's really, really good, right? Obviously really, really good. But you start thinking about October and you start thinking about teams you're going to face and some of the elite talent they're going to face in these tight games. And you wonder who's going to be up for those moments. And Camilo kind of has the feel of like a young – I don't want to compare him to young K-Rod because that was historic, but like these young pitchers that come in and are, you know, just out of nowhere are throwing gas in the postseason and just are kind of an X factor in October. And I think he has the look of somebody who can be an X factor for this team in October, which is a very nice benefit for a team that probably did not expect that when they sent him down earlier in the season.
I hear you saying he needs to work on command before he takes that ninth inning spot regularly, but command schmamand. How many times do we see like the Brian Wilson closing era? We're going to get a walk or two. It's just part of the torture. Don't worry about it. We'll get out of it. It's going to be fine. I mean, we've learned
torture.
That.
You can have torture.
Torture's real. Yeah. But we've kind of like learned, I don't know, maybe I'm using we liberally here, but we've learned that Rogers, you know, isn't feasting quite the same way that he did in the eighth when he's pitching in the ninth. I don't know if it's just his stuff doesn't translate the same, but I'm ready to see someone like Camilo take over that closer role and put Rogers back. I'm not talking about demoting him. I don't see that as a demotion for Rogers, just more of like a put him where he would thrive more.
Yeah, I went back and forth on this in tonight's game, and I think Camilo could handle it. I also think it's tremendously valuable to have somebody with that kind of stuff who you can throw in the middle innings. And in an ideal world, Jake McGee comes back. I know people don't feel comfortable with Jake McGee either, but you have those guys late in the game that you know have gotten you through a lot of wins this season. And Duvall's just kind of an extra, a boost there in the sixth and the seventh.
To face, I guess, you need a guy, when the bases are loaded, Machado's up.
I am very pro Rodgers. I think I have been on this podcast all season long. I mean, the guy has a 2 ERA coming into tonight. He has been outstanding. He takes the ball every single time. He is really, really good in the seventh and eighth. You're right. There is something about the ninth a little bit. And it was really interesting when he came in tonight. I sit next to Carey Crowley, and we basically talked the entire game. And he comes in, and we're like, on the one hand, good for them. 4-run lead. They're not messing around. You bring in your best reliever here. He's your closer right now. You bring him in. On the other hand, Rodgers is pretty high up on the list of guys who, when it's not going right, can give up 4 runs pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. And it was starting to happen there. And Fernando Tatis Jr. is an inch away, or a slightly better swing away from or probably shouldn't swing at that pitch in the first place. But, it was happening there. So I understand the angst that people feel with Rodgers there in the ninth. I don't think they're quite at that point yet. I do think they have some decisions to make before they get to October, and potentially involving Tony Watson too, who's been really good. And you know, he's going to handle the emotions of late game situations as well.
So we should give Tatis Jr. a shout out, because we are watching a generational talent. He's hit his 40th home run in a season where he missed a serious amount of time.
I think he's at like 119 games.
Yeah, it's surprising he hasn't done more damage to the Giants this year. I'm going to be honest, I was kind of relieved when he hit that home run, because I was like, yes, he got it out early. That means, one was inevitable tonight. He's not going to get it if the game gets close in the ninth.
Yeah, I've seen some walk-offs here in that short porch and left. You are pretty close to poking one out there. He was pretty close there. I will say, he's 2 years younger than Camilo Duvall. So here we have this young, hard-throwing right-hander. We're really excited. Giants closer of the future. Tatis is 2 years younger than him. He's the same age as Elliot Ramos, and he hit his 40th home run tonight. And I was really surprised, actually, because I have thought that they have done an outstanding job of handling him all year and really have held him down. And he came into tonight's game with an OPS over 900 against the Giants. Obviously raised that tonight. Hit his fourth home run this year against him, which is not, Arenado, Will Myers territory, but it's not bad.
Respectable.
I don't think he has by any means had the type of season against the Giants that he will have at some point. And he still has kind of, low key done a really nice job against him. I also think if you're the Giants, like, you feel great about that, what he's done to you. So it's a weird thing. Like, he is just so talented. And I don't say this about many people, but if you have the chance to go to, first of all, if you have a chance to go to San Diego, go to San Diego, make that trip. But if you can't do that and you have the chance to at home at some point over the next couple of years, watch him play at Oracle Park, because he's like at the peak of his athleticism right now. And it is unlike anything else that you will see on a baseball field. Just watching him, I can't tell you how many times over the last couple of weeks watching him, he rounds first base on a single and you're like, oh, he's going to go for two. And then it's like very clearly not the right decision. And you think, oh my God, they're going to get him at first, because he's halfway to second and he's 20 yards beyond Brandon Belt. And then he scampers back and finds his way. It's just unlike anything going on in baseball right now. And I would highly, highly recommend people make the trip out to see him in person and see him a couple times in person, because you're going to see something that really, I think, makes you appreciate just how talented he is.
Would you say he's the face of baseball? Like the future, like, face, the branding of baseball? Or would you give that to Bryce Harper? Because I think he's on like the video game and stuff like that. And when they do national commercials, it's him flipping the bat.
I think he should be. I mean, I think the way to sell this game is some of the stuff he does. I mean, like, Trey Turner's slides are the coolest thing I've ever seen. Like, that needs to be everywhere, like, those are the things you sell. Not that Trey Turner's the face of baseball by any means, but like, they're doing things athletically that are different than what most guys are doing. And that is how it's not a direct comparison, but like, Steph Curry's different athletically than what we have seen from basketball players. And so I'll just say, having seen these guys in person, having seen Tatis in person, like, just go watch him run. It's just watch him run the bases. It's just a different experience.
We got to give a shout out to Wednesday's starting pitcher, Mr. Olympic silver medalist,
yeah,
Scott Kazmir. Great outing he put together there. I know he was kind of a eat some innings up, see what you can do. And I think he gave the Giants much more than they could have hoped for.
Yeah, four. I mean, ends up being four innings, one unearned run. He did leave a bit of a mess for Camilo Duvall, but
damage.
Yeah, and I don't totally blame that on him either, because like it was, you know, there was some hard contact there in the first four innings. Like, kind of felt like somebody should have been up a little bit sooner in the bullpen, but can't really ask for much more than that from Scott. And I think that's the same. Like his first start this year, like can't ask for much more. Like that. You know, the Aaron Sanchez thing didn't really work out. The Scott Kazmir thing has worked out, I think, beautifully. And it's a really cool story for him to come back after 5 years and not just get back in the big leagues, be pitching in huge games down the stretch, but also revealed to us that he had talked to the Olympic team in 2019. And this was part of his motivation for getting back on the mound was to pitch in the Olympics. And then obviously he ends up in the big leagues with the Giants. But the DFA kind of turned out perfect for him because he you know, got a call the next day from Team USA and gets a silver medal, got a trip to Tokyo.
Well, getting a silver medal and a ring in 1 year would be quite a cool accomplishment. I want to kind of put this into perspective because Scott Kazmir seems like a name from my high school era of watching baseball. So Kazmir joined the league in 2004 and he started with the Devil Rays, not the Rays, the Devil Rays. The tank top wearing like rainbow jersey Devil Rays, and he faced off against like the Jermaine Dye, Eric Chavez, Eric Burns, A's. Like
you,
that
was the
era
video game your dad did
about.
the audio for.
Oh yeah, like this is a dude who
he
was 100% in MVP
was in that
baseball
game. Yeah.
2005.
Yeah, he was 100%. I have hit a home run off him in a video game before. 100%.
Oh, that's awesome. So great surprise this week. Also out there with the long luscious locks looking like some kind of surfer bro.
I know.
I loved it.
How about him like trying to beat out an infield single too? Like it was
he's gonna get hurt.
I know. 37 years old. He admitted he was like cramping up after the game. I just think it's such a cool, like, you know, not many people get to go out on their own terms. And like you said, I mean, no matter what happens this year, it's coming away from 2021 with a silver medal, potentially coming away from this ring with a lot more than this season with a lot more than that. So a very, very cool story. I've been happy to cover it going back to spring training. And he just seems like really happy to be here, really happy to be involved. And somebody to root for, definitely.
We're giving shout outs to players. I also want to give a shout out to Mr. Chadwick Tromp. I think with all the roster moves up and down, waivers, you know, options, whatever, I kind of forgot that we could lose players like this to waivers.
Yeah, they do a good job.
So this caught me
guys through.
They really do. So this caught me completely off guard, but Chadwick Tromp is now an Atlanta Brave. And I, correct me if I'm wrong, but this is a guy you knew pretty well, right? You and Tromp are buddies?
We are just, you know, I think colleagues? he was very well liked by the media. I'll put it that way. Okay. And here's what I'll say. It has been a very weird two seasons to cover baseball. Like you're basically on Zoom up until, I don't know, May of this year, June of this year, maybe. Mm-hmm. So in last year it was, and not Zoom's just a weird environment. Like people have probably seen the press conferences on TV. So Chadwick Tromp was a breath of fresh air when he jumped in these Zoom calls. Like it was just nice to have someone who was excited to come in at, you know, 11:30 after a game. And it was a good quote. And I think people just saw the enthusiasm, and I think the fan base saw it. I mean, teammates certainly saw it. He was well-liked. And I just think for the media, we just appreciated somebody who was really having a good time and really enjoyed being up in the big leagues. And I think he's a pretty good player too. You know, he is capable of being one of those guys who's a backup catcher in this league for a long time. Something about backup catchers, man, like Stephen Vogt, Nick Hundley, like you go down the line.
Will Sandoval.
Like, yeah. They are like the most likable group of all time. I think we've seen it from Kurt Casale this year, right? Like how many times has he gotten on the post game show and people appreciate him. So Yeah, backup catchers just have that vibe, and he certainly I think has a career if he can figure a few things out on the field. But somebody who to root for, and you know, now in position, look, he has a 40% chance of getting a ring potentially when the postseason starts. So
yeah, he doubled his odds. Teams.
Yeah.
There we go. I mean, the Braves, Anthony Garcia, a mutual friend of ours, pointed this out on Tuesday after the Braves picked Trumped up, that they're kind of putting together a roster that's easy to root for Giants fans. They got Trump, Will Smith, Smiley, Vogt, Adrianza, Duvall. They had Sandoval earlier this year. So they're kind of doing like the former Giants thing. And I wouldn't be surprised if more teams didn't start doing that. Like, every time a Giants player shows up on waivers, it's going to be like, oh, is this one of Farhan's guys? Get him.
Yeah, I don't think they've quite reached – and Trump was one of the first ones. I don't think they've quite reached the point where they DFA guys and they're, you know, markedly better than what you have in most other 40-man rosters. But they're going to get there. I mean, you know, next year they're going to get there. And as they start getting more young players up on the roster and more guys on the 40-man, it's going to happen. So there's going to be a lot more of this where you see guys – you know, it won't be the guys like, no offense, Steven Okert, but Steven Okert, who's off the roster and ends up in Miami a little while later, like, you don't even know it. Like, I think you're going to see a lot more guys down the line who get DFA'd, and we get the note 3 days later that he's now an Atlanta Brave, or he's now, you know, whoever. If I'm like Baltimore, I'm just claiming anybody Farhan DFA's. I don't know what they're
doing. Exactly.
They're better than whoever you have on your 40, man. So.
We obviously are still looking over our shoulder a little bit. The magic number is 9. The Giants have a 2-game lead over the Dodgers. Colorado did the Giants a little bit of a favor this week, not squeaking out. That is not the word you should use. They kind of blew out the Dodgers in a game that the Dodgers, judging by the starting pitcher, had already marked as a W from the first pitch. Walker Buehler had a tough go of it. But the night before, too, they almost had one. They could have really sealed the Giants' season here if they had taken 2 in a row from the Dodgers.
Yeah, Colorado has a huge hand to play the next week. And look, Giants go there after this. So they're and won't be taken lightly, obviously, because of what they did last time they went in there. But they did the Giants a favor on Wednesday night. Can do it again on Thursday, potentially. But, yeah, that was a weird game because it was, I think it was 5-4, and the Dodgers had the bases loaded with nobody out and have their guys coming up. And you think that, all right, here you go.
It is.
And then Turner hits a sack fly. Trey Turner gets back picked at second base. And all of a sudden they're out of that inning. And Colorado just kind of ran away with it from there. So they did the Giants a solid. It's going to be funny to see the next week because the Dodgers play Arizona. They play San Diego. There's some teams in the division that usually you would be rooting against 19 times a year that those guys can make some friends in San Francisco the next week and a half.
I think the whole National League is sick enough, or the whole National League West is sick enough of the Dodgers after how many years of winning the division? 10?
8?
8?
Yeah.
8?
No, it was interesting tonight at Petco. Like, they showed the Dodgers score probably about an inning after that game ended, and they showed it during an inning break, and everybody cheered on both sides. There were a lot of Giants fans there, obviously, but a lot of Padres fans cheering as well. And I just thought it was interesting that they showed that score, first of all, because it's not Oracle Park. And I think there is a little bit of a, you know, they were trying to knock them out. They went hard after them. They really wanted to be the team that knocked them out. They haven't been able to do it. They're not going to do it, but they still want to see them knocked out.
Did you not read all the articles in June about how the true rivals of Major League Baseball are the Padres and Dodgers?
Yeah, that was. I will give anybody a pass for writing about how good the Dodgers and Padres were coming into the season, because they were. Like, you coming into the season, like I said it as well, those rosters were unbelievable. They were potentially the two best teams in all of baseball. I will not give anybody a pass for bringing up the rivalry angle, which people were still doing, like you mentioned. People were doing it in August. You know,
yeah.
A network that I won't name had a four-letter network had a big article in August about these rivals battling for playoff positions, and it was not the Giants and Dodgers. It was the Dodgers and Padres. So, that was like the most contrived thing of all time.
Giants are just over here like Rodney Dangerfield getting no respect.
Yeah.
And you know what? I'm kind of fine with it. Before we go to the Thursday Dwayne Kuiper segment, I do want to ask you if you had a take on the kind of situation going on with the Blue Jays. Did you see this? The cheat sheet?
100% for Kiermaier.
Okay. Me too.
Yeah. 100%.
So for those of you who don't really know what's going on, Kiermaier slid into home. Catcher dropped his cheat sheet for how they were going to pitch to it was the Blue Jays, right?
Yeah.
Pitched to the Blue Jays batters. And he just picked it up and brought it to the dugout and had the opposing team's intel. And
they tried to get it back. And they were like,
and they said, no, like, we're not handing it over. Like, if you have that kind of top secret information, lock that down. What are you doing?
Your dad has been way ahead of this one. He has predicted multiple times on here, and he is coming up again. He has predicted multiple times that at some point we will see a batter go up to the plate and pull a card out of his back pocket and try to figure out what's coming up next. And it is, I don't blame him for doing this, but it's bizarre when you watch it. If you go to a game live and watch a pitching change and you see a bat boy run out and change all the defensive shift cards, all the signs, everything, just everybody gets a new card and they are just, you know, shuffling these cards back and forth. I'm surprised more of them don't fall out. You know, people are keeping them in their hats. They're keeping them in their back pockets. You drop one of those on the field, like, sorry, that's on you. You can't be bringing all this info out to the field to get an edge and then you drop it and expect them to give it back.
Exactly. And, you know, to drill him the next day and not get tossed for that, I don't know.
I'm never a fan of drilling the next day, first of all. Like, if you want to do it, do it right away. I think they're getting blown out, too. So they're like, all right, well, now we'll hit
Howard. 100%
pro Kiermaier. I thought it was funny. I don't know if you saw John Heyman on Twitter was like, what if you drop your grandmother's picture? Do they get to pick that up, too?
Oh, my God. Yeah, I saw that.
Good stuff.
Like,
good stuff.
The worst take of the week alert from Heyman, but, you know, what can you do?
Usually it's another person who's putting those out there. But
I think Jeff Passan actually had a pretty funny one. I'm trying to pull it up right now, so he's stalling for time. But it was like a finder's keeper something. Man, this makes
losers
for really bad.
Back with a 93-mile-per-hour fastball or
there we go. You had it memorized. Why'd you make me over here looking like an idiot?
I'm a Passan fan. Jeff's a good guy. Jeff buys barbecue at the World Series in 2014 for everybody. So this is a pro Passan podcast.
Pro Passan podcast.
And I like Heyman too. That was just a terrible take.
You know, we're going to get some of those from time to time in baseball media. It happens.
It does. I have my own out there.
All right. Fair. All right. Let's bring in Dwayne Kuiper. Let's talk a little Giants Padres. Let's talk some San Diego in general, and let's talk some Lamont Wade Jr.
Wade Knight Lamont. All right. It is a Thursday, so as always, we bring Dwayne Kuiper in, and I have actual baseball questions, but I know Cole is just itching to ask you a non-baseball question, so I'm just going to turn it right over to him.
Right off the bat, I mean, the team's in San Diego. Your daughter's in San Diego. Alex is in San Diego. You and me are stuck here in Northern California. How many photos from the tin fish have you received this week, and how badly do you wish you were down there?
Well, I'll just tell you the story that we were there, I don't know, within the last 5 years. We had a four-game series, all night games, and Mike and I ate at the tin fish every day for lunch. And it absolutely drove Dave Fleming crazy. Because he's likes to experiment. He believes that you eat at a place once and then you move on. Well, Mike and I don't do that. If we like something, we're actually going to get after it. And our families are the ones that have to suffer, because when we go in and our families are with us, we have to go to the tin fish. Our favorite story is when the Krukos and their family ate with us. Chase, who is Cole's age, ordered chicken fingers, and he has never heard the end of it. Ever, ever, ever has heard the end of it.
And, it's not the tin chicken. Come on.
It's the tin fish. And look, is it a five-star restaurant? No. But it serves a purpose. And you know, if you like fish and chips, well, then there you go. Or fish tacos. I mean, it's pretty good.
Yeah, Dannon sent me a picture of her food, my sister, your daughter, for those who are listening. And I pretty much told her, like, if you send me another picture, I'm deleting your number.
I know, and it's impossible to throw that in a suitcase and bring it home.
No, it doesn't travel.
That would not be a good thing. And I know Alex has at least been there once.
I am one for one. I'll be at least two for three. The day game's a little tricky with getting into Petco Park now.
Yeah, I'm not a fish and chips guy for breakfast, but... But you know, and if you don't get there at a decent time before the game, you know, then you're going to have to suffer standing in line. But if you get there early enough for lunch, it's the only other time it's really been an issue is if there's a convention.
Yeah.
Because then there's going to be a line all the time, and it is right across the street from the convention center, which is huge. It's like an Amazon building, the convention center. I mean, that building was like that before Amazon even was in existence. But it is a definite convention destination.
It is. I will say that we have done the day game, go to Bruce Bochy's pregame press conference, leave the ballpark, go to Tin Fish, and then
there you go.
But I will move on to baseball. That game ended really in a remarkable way with the Brandons and Tyler Rogers turning a double play on Tuesday night. And you got caught because you had a great call. And then, as we've seen happen, I think three times this year, they go to replay. So you're all of a sudden, we're all waiting there and waiting to make sure that it was a game-ending double play. Is that difficult for you when you have the call? You think we're done? We're going back to the studio. We're going to come back and talk to, you know, Wade Jr. And then you have to wait for a minute and hope that, hey, they actually did get that.
Yeah, I mean, you can't go back and change the call. It would definitely spoil the call if they flip the decision. But when we saw the replay, we were pretty sure that that was not going to happen. When I first saw the play from a distance in replay, it looked like there was a chance that Crawford's foot might have been off the bag. But once we showed it, he was perfect. He timed it perfectly. And in all honesty, the Brandons make that play as good, if not better, than any other first baseman shortstop in baseball. I mean, they've known each other, you know, for at least more than 10 years. Their lockers are right close next to each other. They play catch before the game. I mean, if you ever come to the park early, just watch the Brandons. Is they will start out from a long distance by playing catch, and then they slowly move towards each other. And then whoever gets the last shot, they're only like 3 feet from each other. And I'm not going to tell you where they shoot that last ball, but that's where they end it. And it's quite comical, but Crawford makes the play. You know, Belt has got the most difficult part because Machado hit that ball like 110 miles an hour.
112.
And was it 112?
Yeah.
And then for him not to come up with it cleanly made it even more difficult. But
on Tyler Rogers there, who caught a ball that was thrown at like 112.
And it knocked him over. I mean, it gives you an idea that he needs to put some weight on because Crawford just zipped it right at him and he almost fell over backwards. But it was a sensational way to end the game. And very frustrating, I'm sure, for the Padres. Even though they caught a break on the first ball hit that went under Crawford's glove, which is so unusual. But hey, you know, Machado making the last out actually was ice cream. It was dessert.
Yeah, poor Machado had two home runs, almost had another one, and then hits one 112 and gets the game-ending double play. And then he has to watch Lamont Wade Jr. I think Mike calls him Leninth Wade Jr. He is late game Lamont on Giants Twitter, or late night Lamont in the clubhouse. And he is 12 for 19 in the ninth inning, which you actually might know something about because your best average as a player came in the ninth inning. I don't know if you knew this.
I didn't.
295 in the ninth inning as a player. Is it more difficult in the ninth inning? Is this some? Are we making too big a deal out of this? Because his numbers in the ninth and even in extra innings are pretty incredible. And it does seem like those are the hardest at-bats of the game.
They should be, because you're facing the opposition's best reliever, which is their closer, usually. I'm sure a few of those hits came
where the game was, you know, on the road and maybe out of hand. But for the most part, all of his hits have come off of the opposition's best reliever. And it really has been remarkable as to what he's been able to do. Look, he didn't exactly hit that ball on the nose last night, but when you're facing Melanson, that's usually the type of hits that left-handers get against Melanson. And we saw his splits before the ninth inning started, and right-handed hitters were hitting like maybe 250, 260 off of Melanson, but lefties were hitting under 200. So Belt didn't exactly scorch the ball, neither did Lamont Wade Jr., but that's kind of what you get when you face someone that's got as good a cutter as Melanson does. Unfortunately, I wish we would have seen that cutter more often when he was in a Giants uniform, but that's another story for another day. The answer to your question, Alex, is, what Wade has done is pretty remarkable.
What do you think makes him such a good hitter in clutch situations? The ability?
I just think he's cool. I think his personality is one where he doesn't get overamped, and you can't get overamped in the ninth, and it's easy to get overamped in the ninth. It's easy to get jumpy because you want to find out how the at-bat is going to go really fast, and I think he's just the opposite. I think he slows everything down to a point where he sees the pitch better, and look, if he had those numbers in the first inning, it would be remarkable. But the fact that he has it in the ninth inning is truly, truly remarkable. And now he's what? He's hit for the cycle against the National League West as far as winning games.
Plus the A's.
Add the A's with that home run in the ninth. So what he's done is pretty cool. And, you know, the thing about it, guys, is I thought that Gabe Kapler was going to pinch hit for him in the seventh inning with Slater. But he didn't, because of all the right-handed relievers that the Padres had left. He left Lamont Wade Jr. in there just in case he was going to face another righty, and he did.
Yeah, Lamont mentioned on postgame with Greg Papa that him and the rest of the team didn't know the Dodgers had already won Tuesday night because they were just so dialed in, focused on the game at hand. And that's a good answer. It certainly fits the Gabe Kapler team narrative. But do you buy that? Do you really think they're not shoulder watching the Dodgers and getting score updates during the game?
Well, I buy maybe he didn't know, but I don't buy the fact that other guys didn't know. I mean, you're always going to have a group of guys that they don't have anything else to do but cheer for your – they're usually the starting pitchers where they don't have anything else to do but cheer, pull out the pom-poms and watch the scoreboard. And you know, look, I don't think anybody in that dugout is going to turn around and yell really loud, "Hey, the Dodgers won. Let's try harder." I think if somebody said that, you know, somebody would knock him in the head and say, you know, I'd go up in the clubhouse and take a nap. You're killing everybody. But I do believe that there were a number of guys that certainly knew the Dodgers had won because it's just human nature to watch that scoreboard.
We have talked, obviously, a lot about the Padres this year. We've asked you about the Padres early in the year. I think at the All-Star break, I still viewed them as a real threat. And they are 21 and a half games out of first place. The talk here is, you know, can they even finish 500, given what they have over the next week and a half? You've watched all these games. What do you think happened to them? Aside from the injuries, but just it seems like kind of just a team that's too talented to be in this position in late September.
Yeah, I think the one strength that they had other than Machado and Tatis was I think at the beginning of the year, if you looked at their starting pitching, it was pretty formidable. And I think a lot of that has gone sideways due to health. Some guys just haven't pitched as well. Health in major injuries. I think Darvish, if you ask them privately, they would probably say he's been a disappointment. And then maybe there's not as close in the clubhouse as everybody thought they would be, and certainly not as close in the clubhouse as what the Giants are. I mean, that's pure speculation because I don't have any idea as what that clubhouse is like. But I do think the manager's in trouble. When you have expectations that are so high, and your fan base is expecting it, and you draw decent crowds, and they have, I think it's all end up going to fall on the manager. And the fact that Boch's name has been thrown out, I wouldn't be surprised at all if they don't go to him, and then he has to make a decision whether he wants to do it or not.
I know you're super close with Padres broadcaster and former Giant Mark Grant. Have you talked to him at all about what's going on this season, or at least engaged in some friendly trash talk over there?
Well, I haven't, but Mike has. They both have the same job. You know, Mike is the color guy for the Giants. Mark is the color guy for the Padres. And it's pretty wise on their part to talk to each other before the series starts, because they can compare notes. How is your manager using the bullpen? Who's going to pitch the 6th, 7th, 8th, and 9th? And that information you can get from one of their broadcasters. And, you know, Mark Grant was a teammate of ours. You know, we're all really close, and we love the guy. And, you know, and he's going to give us information. We give him information. You don't give him everything, because you're not allowed to. But you know, and he's told us some stuff about the Padres that we really can't share. And we've probably told him things that he can't share with the public. But that's how you develop a relationship, and you keep a relationship, is when you're truthful, but yet you don't give away all the secrets. And we haven't done that with him, and he hasn't done it with us.
So no trash talking then. You guys are keeping it civil with Mark?
I think it starts out like, you know, we're going to kick your tail for 4 games. And then he's either going to say, no, you're not, or he's going to say, yeah, I'm really worried that you are. We're either going to get one of those two responses, and I'm not going to tell you which one we got.
Well, you have bragging rights into the offseason at the very least, and into spring training. And next year, when hopefully you can get 10 fish for yourself, I promise not to send you a picture if I go 2 for 2.
We're really hopeful that we can travel some next year. I mean, I don't know if we will – end up traveling to every city, but those discussions are going to be really heavy discussions that we will have with the Giants, and certainly with NBC Sports Bay Area and their people, to see what they really want to do. But the game is easier to broadcast. That final play on Tuesday night would have been a lot easier to call if we were there than it was having to call it off the monitor, because when Machado hit the ball, I thought that it was a base hit just because of his swing and where the ball was going, because I knew that Belt was probably the only defender on the right side, or certainly the second baseman, Listella, was going to be really shading Machado to pull. So when he hit it, I thought at that velocity and the direction it was going in, that was a base hit. So I was really shocked when we got finally got the shot, and we got it pretty close to right away, that it was hit almost right at Belt. So it's a lot easier to call the games when you're there, that's for sure.
Well, I noticed that in I think it was the 7th inning, when all 3 Padres outs were big, loud fly balls to the outfield. That's got to be tough, because any one of those could have been out of the ballpark based on what I was seeing on the monitor.
Yeah, when you see a hitter in the launch angle that he takes, and it looks like he hits it pretty good, you know, you think that it's definitely out. And those 3 balls, I thought at least 2 of them were gone. And I'm only going by what Nola's ball did. I mean, Nola hit his ball pretty good, but the ball was really carrying. The only one that didn't carry that I thought was gone was Machado's 3rd at bat. I mean, yeah. I really thought he had 3. And even Duggar's ball, I thought Duggar hit it great, but I didn't think he hit it enough to hit it out. And it turned out that if Myers doesn't make the catch, he's got a home run. And that certainly would have made the game a little bit more less interesting if that ball goes out.
Well, ended in a fun way, and we will hear you on Wednesday's call and hear you the rest of the year. Dwayne, thanks as always. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, guys. You guys have a good one.
Let's jump into Peppa's world of play. Look for spring flowers, hunt for muddy puddles, and bravely explore exciting places with Peppa play sets. Peppa Pig, inspiring kid confidence.